Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back. Second hour of Catholic Answers Live. Are you pro-choice? We'd like to know why you are pro-choice. Maybe you're convinced that we should enshrine and keep enshrined in law the idea that a child, well, I don't know. I don't want to say it in too prejudicial a way, Trent, but I don't suppose it's prejudicial, that a child's life can be taken in the womb. 888-318-7884 is the number, 888-31-TRUTH. Why are you pro-choice? Did I say pro-life before? Sometimes I do that on this show. Why are you pro-choice? We go now to Melanie in Omaha, Nebraska, listening to 102.7. I think that's Spirit Catholic Radio. Melanie, why are you pro-choice?
Hi. I believe that this whole argument is more of a philosophical argument. And it goes down to whether a individual, the right of the mother outweighs the right of the unborn child.
Outweighs the right of the child to do what?
So the mother's right to abort the child outweighs the child's right to life. An unborn child doesn't have any rights until it's born.
Okay, so you think human beings only have rights when they're born. So that's your view, Melanie? Okay.
Yes.
Why do human beings only have rights when they're born?
Well, when it's in utero, the baby is dependent completely upon the mother and for life of any kind, and should be the mother's choice whether she wants to be that life support person, or not. And you can choose that you want to continue with a pregnancy and have a child and then give the child up for adoption or parent, or you can choose that you don't want to have to be that vessel for this unborn child, and then it's your right to be able to terminate that pregnancy.
Melanie, you think a pregnant mother is a vessel?
Well, basically, I mean, if you want to look at it in that term, yes.
Okay. I'm also just curious, are you, you sound very confident in your position. Are you personally involved in this issue in any way, or why are you so passionate for the pro-choice position?
I'm a liberal, a feminist, and I also worked with Planned Parenthood for 22 years, so I was on the front lines of this issue. And even though my job was birth control and preventing pregnancy, because really the ultimate is to prevent somebody from having an unwanted pregnancy, and that's what I believe in is ultimately, but when it does happen and a woman doesn't want to be, then she should be able to have the right to terminate that pregnancy.
Well, Melanie, I'm actually not necessarily opposed to terminating pregnancies. I just think they should be done at around 9 months and that the baby should not be terminated along with the pregnancy either. But I'm trying to understand your argument. I'm having a hard time with it. You're saying the unborn baby does not have rights, or the mother has the right to decide to end the baby's life because the reason you gave was just because they're extremely helpless, because that little baby needs their mom and can't survive with anyone else. Their mom gets to decide if they live or die, just simply because they're extremely helpless and dependent upon her. Is that your position? It makes it sound like might makes right.
No, it's really
then what about my summary is incorrect?
Well, there's nothing. There's not anything incorrect about your summary other than it's kind of leading in that the that we're terminating because the baby's helpless. And
right,
it's
but
not we're terminating, the mother's terminating because she doesn't want to be pregnant.
Right.
And
so
she has that right to do that because it's her body and it's her choice.
So you're saying she can So if a woman engages in an activity that's known to create a human life, a baby, she engages in that activity, the baby exists, and she's allowed to do whatever she wants to that baby because the baby's living in her body and she created that child?
Yes.
So that's might makes right. She's the powerful one, the baby's the weak one, and she gets to decide what happens. But can she do that after birth? Like, let's say it's a two-year-old in the house and it's snowing outside and the two-year-old's driving her up the wall and she says, you know what, it's my house, my choice, kicks him outside into the freezing cold and he freezes to death. Should she be allowed to do that too?
No, because once the child is born, then the child has rights.
Why? The child is still dependent. Like, let's take a newborn baby. Would you agree a newborn baby is dependent on adults, an adult of some kind?
Yes.
So then could adults get together and decide to kill newborn babies because they're so helpless?
Well, the difference is that this baby is born, and that's when I believe that that you gain rights as a human, as an individual, at birth, or at once the baby can live on its own.
Right, but
you know, well, I mean, because you're looking at 25, 26 week births, and those babies can survive on their own with interventions, and they have rights. I mean, we're not going to just go in and kill them because they're a preterm birth, but you know, at 12, 14 weeks, that's a completely different case than.
So, but at 12 or 14 weeks, it's just the baby needs to live in the womb to survive. The baby is just much more helpless. Your view, I want to make sure this is right. You have the right to kill a baby when they can only live in a certain place, which would be the womb.
Like, correct. Yeah, I mean, basically, yeah, that's, I guess, in a nutshell what I'm saying.
Okay, well, then I guess I would say, don't you think the more compassionate view is to say that all babies, all human beings, all human beings, whether they're men or women, whether they're, even if they're abortion providers, someone who had worked at Planned Parenthood like yourself, whether they're young or old, sick or healthy, born or unborn, all human beings have the right to life and should be protected from being unjustly killed, whether they're born or unborn, Planned Parenthood worker, a pro-lifer, whoever it is, all human beings have the same equal rights. Don't you think that's a more compassionate view, a more equitable view?
I think it's not a very realistic view.
Why not?
Because we're giving rights and forcing, we're giving rights to a group of cells, basically, at one point, even though they're going to be human, and then you're taking away, because the mother now has this group of cells in her body, she has no rights at all.
Group of cells, Melanie, would you agree you and I are groups of cells?
Yes, we are groups. We're all groups of cells. And when you call it a baby, a zygote, a fetus.
Let's say human being. Well, it's a human being,
okay,
right? It's a biological human being.
Okay, so now you've taken the rights of this human being that's inside the womb, and those rights, that infant or baby, have now taken over the rights of the mother. So now the
Melanie,
mother doesn't have any rights.
No, that's not true. Melanie, answer this question. I'm not saying the mother has no rights. I'm saying if the child has a right to live, then the mother does not have a right to kill the child. The only right, quote unquote, I would like to take away from born people is the alleged right to kill an unborn child. By making abortion illegal, can you tell me what other rights am I taking away from women except for the supposed right to kill the child.
Well, they really, that's the woman's choice.
Okay, well, and I guess that's the impasse that we're going to reach here, that ultimately the division over our worldviews are this. Are we going to say that all human beings matter and should be protected? And I think that's a very realistic view, that we should protect all human beings. And the other view says that in the name of choice, born people should be allowed to kill unborn people because they're very, very helpless and weak. To me, a civilized society does not say a person's helplessness is the reason that they can be legally killed. They say their helplessness is the reason the law should protect them from being unjustly killed. And that's the society I want to live in. And I hope that to compare that, I think the view we've offered on the show in this segment is better than the view offered by our caller, for example, who worked at Planned Parenthood for decades. You know, the Planned Parenthood view, which says not every human being deserves the right to live or has equal rights, and our view, which is that they do. And I'll leave it up to our listeners to take that lesson away from that.
Trent Horn, our guest this hour, why are you pro-choice? The question of the hour, if you are pro-choice and you would like to share with us why you're pro-choice and discuss it with Trent, give us a call, 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. This is Catholic Answers Live, and we'll be right back.
Why are you pro-choice? Call now. Trent is waiting to talk to you.
Hi, this is Cy Kellett, host of Catholic Answers Live, and I'm looking forward to meeting you this September 28th to 30th at our fourth annual National Apologetics Conference here in beautiful San Diego. This is one conference you are not going to want to miss. The theme is the reunion of all Christians, and we've got an all-star lineup of speakers guaranteed to fire you up. Catholic historian Steve Weidenkopf, apologist Mark Brumley, apologist Devin Rose, plus all your favorite Catholic Answers apologists. For almost four decades, Catholic Answers has been engaging our separated brethren in charity to bring them to the fullness of the truth. Join us for a lively and inspiring conference designed to help you play an active part in the reunion of all Christians. This is where it all begins. Join us this September for a conference that is sure to ignite and inform your faith. Seats are available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 1-888-291-8000 today to register.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking new resource by apologist Trent Horn, that one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. Don't miss out on the most important, life-changing book to come along in years. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Pope Francis said, "All of us are called to mature in our work as evangelizers. We want to have better training, a deepening love, and a clear witness to the gospel. St. Paul Street Evangelization's online School of Evangelization will equip you with the tools you need to be an effective evangelist. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you're unable to give, we'll set you up for free. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Our summer series continues tonight, live in the San Diego area. This one won't be streamed. It'll be streamed at a later date. Catholic Answers host Cy Kellett. Oh, I should have had you read this one, Trent. Catholic Answers host Cy Kellett will be speaking tonight. That's me. On the five great deceptions we face today. Talk will be at St. Michael's Catholic Church on Homedale Street, I think it is, at 6:30 p.m. For more information on attending the talk, visit Catholic Answers Facebook page or give us a call, 888-291-8000. Why are you pro-choice is our topic this afternoon. 2 hours with Trent Horn, and they're going by quickly, and the lines are still completely full there, Trent. So let's just keep working our way through them. Dan in Kelso, Washington, listening on EWTN. Why are you pro-choice?
Well, actually, I'm pro-life. I just wanted to tell you guys a quick story. My oldest son when my wife was pregnant, they told us if he did survive birth, that he would be born severely deformed, mentally challenged, and he works as a scientist now in the nuclear field. He's in his 30s. And I just feel that people really need to know this kind of stuff.
Well, thank you very much, Dan, for sharing that story, because I know that last hour we had a caller who was very determined, saying that abortion is necessary because there are children who are diagnosed with fetal deformities or handicaps, and the idea is that, well, it'd be better for them if they were never born at all. And that shows that, one, no matter what someone's physical condition is, they have a right to life and a right to be loved and respected by other human beings. But second, doctors are not infallible. It's very interesting when this, the Charlie Gard case, just, it's interesting. I was actually having a dispute with, not a dispute, but a back and forth on Twitter with someone, Cy, about the Charlie Gard case. And they said, you know, well, what does a Catholic apologist know about any of this? And, you know, it's always the apologists that, you know, what do you know? I say, well, I'm completing a master's in philosophy, and I'm beginning another master's degree in bioethics. So studying ethics and bioethics actually makes me more equipped to say whether a medical action is right or wrong. And his final exchange was, well, I trust the medical experts over the ethical experts.
Oy.
And that's a scary thing. It's like, and it's so interesting, and this is something I'd love to explore in another broadcast or a book or something like that. The scientism that has gripped our world is unbelievable. It's not even just, well, I trust science, I like science. It's taken almost to an extreme by people where if something is in a scientific journal, it might as well be holy scripture. I mean, I remember you had New York Times journalists citing a journal article that said, children, it makes no difference how much time you spend with your kids to their, you know, how well they grow up, which is just obviously wrong if you think about it. But they had such blind faith in the scientists. And, you know, we might say the word of the Lord says, study says.
Yeah, right.
And they printed it, and they later retracted that and said, you know, as journalists who overwork, we wanted to just believe that. That you doesn't, scientists have proven it doesn't matter how much time you spend with your kids. That people will trust something, that they'll make fun of believers who follow people with white collars. I think a lot of people in our day and age, if a scientist in a white lab coat or used to host a children's educational television program, they'll listen to them and claim they're infallible because science can do no wrong, which is totally not true, by the way.
Right.
So that's why we have to. Science is a great tool. It gives us many facts about the world. It tells us the way the world is. It does not tell us the way the world ought to be, or whether children who have mental disabilities should be allowed to be born or should be killed before they're born. That's not a scientific question. It's an ethical question. You have to use philosophy, religious teachings to help you understand how you ought to treat your fellow human being. And on this show, I think we can reasonably show that we ought to treat human beings justly and fairly and humanely, no matter how old they are, born or unborn.
Dan, thanks for, you said your son is a scientist, Dan?
Yeah, he works in a nuclear field.
Very cool.
As a scientist.
Well, it's thanks for that very positive call,
yeah,
and I appreciate it particularly because the idea of had been expressed earlier about aborting the disabled because, well, they're disabled, and that is it's good to know, to hear someone say, well, they're also.
And what's so interesting, Cy, is that the people who are very in favor of making abortion illegal, people who are woke, or really care a lot about being politically correct and sensitive, in other contexts, they will decry ableism. It's a kind of discrimination against someone because of their abilities. They'll even say that it's wrong for you to describe something as lame. Like, that movie was lame. It's like, that's offensive to people with, you know, physical handicaps or ones described as being lame. So they'll worry about that. You know, don't call things lame, but then say we should abort somebody who has a physical or mental disability.
Right,
the disconnect is absolutely astounding.
Why are you pro-choice this hour? That's our question for you, and we would love to discuss it with you. Trent Horn, author of Persuasive Pro-Life, in particular, would like to discuss it with you, and we're very grateful to all of our callers, and we hope we treat each one with dignity and respect, and you can pretty much count on that's going to be our goal if you call 888-318-7884. We go now over to Anonymous in Canada. Anonymous, why are you pro-choice?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Anonymous.
I am pro-choice because of the bodily rights argument, which basically says that no one has a right to someone else's body without their consent. And I'd really encourage your audience to read up on this argument. It's very simple. It's very intuitive. And I don't see how you get around it.
Okay. Well, Anonymous, I'm very familiar with bodily rights arguments. In Chapter 8 of my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, I address those arguments. In fact, I had a debate you and others can look up on YouTube with David Boonin, the leading defender of this kind of argument for abortion. We had a debate at Stanford about this very point. And I think the problem with this argument is that it's an argument by analogy, and the analogy breaks down. I would agree with you that if someone is dying of kidney failure, they don't have a right to my kidney. So I have the right to refuse to save their life. But abortion is not like donating a kidney. It's not refusing to save a sick person. Abortion is more like donating a kidney and then violently taking it back, killing the person in the process. With abortion, you cause someone to become dependent on your body, and then you kill them so that they're no longer dependent. So I might have the right to refuse to save someone's life by giving them an organ. I don't have the right to cause someone to become dependent on my body and then kill them by depriving them of what I've made them dependent upon. So do you see the difference there?
I don't agree. I don't think it's the same. Actually, I disagree with what you're saying. Everyone gets in their cars every day and drives around, knowing that they could cause harm to someone else. If I happen to cause harm to someone else by getting in a car accident, I might even have caused the accident. I might even have died in the accident. It still doesn't give them a right to my body. It doesn't give them access to my body without my consent.
Right. Well, what I would respond to that by 2 points. Number one, there isn't the same connection, causal connection, between driving a car and someone being dependent on your body, such as needing your blood, for example, that driving a car is not, there is no direct causal connection to that. It's a series of events. They're not naturally ordered towards that, so there's no natural responsibility that arises from driving a car that you have to donate organs. And once again here, you wouldn't cause someone to be dependent on you. They would be dying from some other ailment, and once again, you're refusing to save them. But in pregnancy, when a man and woman engage in sexual intercourse, that is naturally ordered towards creating a child who needs the mother's body to survive. And so a natural responsibility to the child arises. I would agree with you, like my blood is meant for my body. My kidneys are meant to filter my blood. So it's extraordinary to expect them to be used for other people's bodies. But a woman's uterus and reproductive system is for the child. So it's not extraordinary to expect the child to be allowed to use the woman's body since she engaged in an activity that made the child who those organs are naturally for. To give you a parallel, let me give you an example. Suppose a woman gives birth to a child and she's in a cabin and she's snowed in. The only way she can feed the child is by breastfeeding. Does the child have a right to her body through breastfeeding?
I want to go back to what you said about natural order. Can we do that?
I'm fine going back to that, but I'm just curious, what's your answer in the breastfeeding case?
The child has no right to the woman's breast. The mother has many options.
Okay. Well, then I'll just describe that as a consistent yet chilling response. Okay. Then what about the? And I think that for most people who would see the child, that if you chose to not breastfeed your baby and starved them, most people would see that as being murder and being wrong. And so if they do see that, then I think my objections to the bodily rights argument hold. But what was your concern about the natural order?
Okay, I wanted to go. Okay, all right. The mother is not. What I wanted to say is the mother is not obligated to breastfeed. She could provide formula. She could.
Let's say she can't. In this case, she is isolated, and she can only breastfeed.
She has no access to food?
No, let's say she's snowed in a rural area. Well, she has access to food, but a baby can't eat food. They'll die. They need either formula or milk.
This is a ridiculous hypothetical.
No, it's no more ridiculous than saying because you can create a baby in the womb and then kill that baby because they supposedly don't have a right to your body, even though you engage in an act that made them and you have organs naturally designed to sustain them. So I don't think it's any more ridiculous at all. And I think the outflow of your argument is shown, which is more or less sane. So something to think about. Definitely check out my book or listen to my debate with David Boonen to hear more on the bodily rights argument and my critique of it.
Thank you very much, Anonymous, for that call. We'll be right back with more. Why are you pro-choice on Catholic Answers Live?
Hi, this is Father Robert Spitzer, president of the Majus Center of Reason and Faith, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Talking about abortion can be scary, but so is anything with which you're unfamiliar. People need to learn how to talk about abortion in ways that inspire confidence in the truth of the pro-life position. We must talk about abortion because we are afraid. Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue, is the new book by apologist Trent Horn that teaches you to face those fears, to engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue with the goal of persuading others. Field-tested on college campuses, Persuasive Pro-Life will help you to change people's hearts and minds and begin to build up a pro-life culture in today's world, one person, one conversation at a time. Order your copy of Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue, today by calling 1-888-291-8000, going to Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore in your area. Also available as an ebook.
Is it possible to know when life begins? Shouldn't women be able to control their own bodies? What if a pregnant woman's life is in danger? In 20 Answers, Abortion, you'll find smart, solid answers to these questions and many more. You'll deepen your understanding of this critical moral issue and gain the knowledge you need to explain it to others. 20 Answers Abortion is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers Press.
Most reality TV leaves out half of reality, the faith that drives us from within. We're giving you the whole picture, real life and faith.
Chris Stefanik is on a journey to uncover the bold, courageous Catholic faith found in the hearts of people all over the world. Meet the everyday Catholics who inspire him as they show the world how amazing faith makes everyday life. Real Life Catholic, Thursday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern on EWTN-TV.
Why are you pro-choice? You must have a reason. Want to share the reason? We've got Trent Horn here to talk with you. Trent is the author of Persuasive Pro-Life and many other books, and happy to take your call. And Trent, you show remarkable restraint sometimes. I mean, even when people talk about starving a baby, you plow ahead calmly and generously, I would say.
Well, I mean, what is interesting, my background is in philosophy. I'm completing a master's in philosophy now and pursuing more study in the field of ethics. And it is interesting when philosophers talk about things, sometimes you do have to entertain counterintuitive or, quite frankly, revolting things. And it's not necessarily incorrect just because it causes a revulsion at first. But I do think it's important that when we are confronted with something that's horrid, that's morally repugnant, we do have to walk a fine line between being casually dismissive, like it's not a big deal to talk about that, or the other extreme would be becoming hysterical. We should not become hysterical or emotional. It's okay to have emotions and let them guide us, but we should be controlling them. They shouldn't be controlling us. Because if we become hysterical at a repugnant view, then sometimes we seem less secure, irrational. And the Bible talks about this as well. It says, do answer a fool according to his folly, lest he become wise in his own eyes. But then the next verse says, don't answer a fool, lest you appear to be a fool in the eyes of others. So it's sort of a damned if you do, damned if you don't when dealing with rather absurd opinions. And so you have to walk a fine line, really, about how we should engage them. And I think it's fine to rationally engage, point out inconsistencies or problems. And for me, I would hope people would see, some repugnant views that when you tease the pro-choice position out to its logical conclusion, you really do get infanticide. I remember reading Peter Singer, the famous Princeton bioethicist, and what he said is he said, pro-lifers are right that there's no morally relevant difference between a baby after birth and before birth. He says, where pro-lifers are wrong, however, is they think because of that, you should treat a fetus like an infant. And Singer says, rather, we should just treat the infant like a fetus. You see what that means?
Yes, yeah. That is a little bit bracing.
And so then, so we have to address it. And then sometimes, and I appreciate philosopher Robert George, one of the new natural law proponents. He sometimes, when he was confronted with infanticide in a symposium, I think it was from First Things. He just said, no, I'm just going to say it's wrong and it's just obvious. And sometimes, you have to just call things out. But where arguments are needed, they should be marshaled. But it is always a fine line between being dismissive and being hysterical.
Why are you pro-choice? That's our question to you. We go now to Vicky in New York, New York, listening on EWTN. Vicky, why are you pro-choice?
I'm sort of like one of the earlier callers that feels as though the decision should be left at the individual level, because I don't always think that life is so black and white. I can think of two cases. Actually, I was going to just speak about one, but I thought of another one where a woman was dying and her fetus was still alive, or a baby. I mean, when we speak about abortion, people say fetus, but I mean, if you're carrying a child with the purpose of delivering the child, it's your child the whole entire way, no matter what month you're in.
Okay, so you have a pregnant woman who's dying. Right, so a pregnant woman who's dying.
So the mother and the baby are in trouble, mm-hmm. and they're both going to die. Now, if you let the mother die, the baby's going to die. Mm-hmm. So it's not so black and white. Like, if the doctor decides or if the family decides to abort the child, and this woman did make that choice to abort the child and then try again, mm-hmm. you could save one life. So for me, I feel like that's a pro-life decision, because if two lives are dying, you should make the choice to save one life.
Okay, well, Vicky, to my response to that, I would say first, if the unborn are not human beings, then it doesn't really matter what the reason is for an abortion, whether a woman's life is in danger or her particular lifestyle, like going to school, having a family of the size she would prefer, whether that's in danger. So even if you allow abortion for health reasons, if the unborn are not human beings, you can allow abortion for any reason. But if the unborn are human beings, like you or I, then direct abortion can never be tolerated. However, it does not follow from that doctors could not act in rare circumstances to save a mother's life, even if that indirectly causes the child to die. And we see this all the time among born people, that sometimes, even though born people all have a right to life, sometimes we have to make decisions and we can only save a certain number of people, but we wouldn't kill one person in order to save another person. So, for example, let's say there's a car crash, a mother and her child are in a car and it's on fire and it doesn't look like we can get the child out and we're having a hard time getting the mom out. But if we used a buzzsaw and cut through the child, we could save the mother. So we'd be killing the child to save the mother. You know, do you see how in that case maybe that would still be the wrong thing to do, even if you save one life?
Well, yeah, and I kind of agree. Like, what I'm saying is we would look at it as we've saved, there are two lives dying. We get to save one life by, I mean, I'm sure you're going to try and save the baby regardless, but in essence, you're going to be aborting this baby, and technically it's an abortion. So the doctor could possibly be, you know, penalized for that. Or, and it has happened in Ireland where mother has died because they refused to take action.
Right. I think I know the case that you're referring to, and but there are other. I'm trying to remember the woman's name. I believe she was of Indian descent, so I have her name roughly in my mind. But in cases where we're not sure what to do with someone who's dying, that doesn't take away from the general truth that we should protect human life where we can. So if a pregnant woman is sick, it's completely fine for a doctor to treat her illness. So whatever it might be, let's say, for example, even she has the most common complication where this situation would arise would be ectopic pregnancy, where the woman has scarring in her fallopian tube, the child's implanted there, the child's going to die either way. But we can act to save the mother by removing the damaged section of the fallopian tube, and the child dies indirectly. So there are cases, like I said, with born people. My friend Stephanie Gray uses a great analogy. Let's say there are two people who are drowning. Sometimes you can only swim and have enough time to save one. And so here you can only save one, you can't save two. But you would never swim out there, put your hand on one, holding one of them under the water in order to save the other person. It's okay to make a choice where you're only able to save one, but you should not kill one person in order to save another person. And I talk about this in my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, in the chapter on hard cases like these. So you can always check that out or go to our website, Catholic.com, for more resources on that question. So thank you very much, though, for calling. It's a good question.
Thank you very much. We go to Matthew driving across Kansas, listening to 88.1. Matthew, why are you pro-choice?
Yeah, hi, Trent. Sorry. Yeah, I've been on hold for a bit. I guess you could say I'm not pro abortion, but I am pro choice, like God is. He told Moses, if you read 2 Kings 24:4, King Manasseh, one of the wickedest kings in Israel's history, you know, sacrificed children to the fire god Molech. And God sent word through the prophet like Jeremiah that he was going to judge Israel for its sins. They were repenting with sackcloth, ashes, weeping, all this stuff. He said he would forgive them of every sin except for one. The shedding of innocent blood he would not forgive.
Right.
And he told Moses, I said, so I'm pro-life there, but he told Moses, I don't know the exact words of the scripture, he said, today I set before you heaven and hell, life versus death, the blessing and the curse. Choose life so that you and your descendants may live.
Oh, that was in reference to Joshua. That was what God told to Joshua. And that was not so much choosing life in a physical sense, like whether you can have abortions or not. What he was saying is to choose life is that the Israelites were to put away idolatry and wickedness and thus choose spiritual life. And it was up to them whether they were going to choose to follow God and have spiritual life or choose to forsake God. But just because it was up to them, that doesn't nullify the law of God, which says that all people, whether they're believers or not believers, have a responsibility to protect the weak and defenseless and to not kill them. Proverbs 6:16 says there are six things that the Lord hates, and one of those are hands that shed innocent blood. So it seems to me that if we are Christian, if we believe in the Bible, then we should believe in protecting people from having their blood shed, especially the unborn. Do you see where I'm coming from?
Oh, yeah, I agree with everything you've said. All your arguments have been great. And it's just, I got to, I got a girl when I was a freshman in high school. I dated a senior in high school. To make a long story short, I lost my virginity and she got pregnant and had an abortion.
I'm sorry to hear that.
I had to carry that sin because my mother was real heavy in the pro-life movement. Used to picket Planned Parenthood, abortion clinics, all this stuff all the time. So I had to go through alone. I was in a car accident.
Did she not know about this, Matthew?
No, she didn't.
That'd be very hard.
For 5 years.
So you're still healing from all of this, and that can kind of weigh on your heart to be sympathetic towards pro-choice stuff. That is a tremendous weight, and I'm hoping that you've taken that sin though, and you're not going to carry the burden yourself, and you've turned that over to our Savior Jesus Christ to carry it.
Amen. I let it down years ago. I carried that sin.
But you remember, there will always be trauma from that, though. Just because God has forgiven us and we've received His grace, there's still always that hurt and that scar. So remember that will be there. But always to seek spiritual direction and help, and possibly counseling too, for the trauma related to premarital sex and abortion that may come from that. And so seek out that counsel from others, and also to seek out the Lord in continuing your spiritual walk. And I hope you'll continue to listen to Catholic Answers, because we'll give you a lot of great resources in your spiritual walk with our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. So thank you so much, Matthew, for calling, and do hope we can get to many of our other callers here before we reach the end of our program today.
God bless you, Matthew. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more Trent Horn. Why are you pro-choice on Catholic Answers Live?
This is Bishop Robert Barron, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
This is Christopher Check, president of Catholic Answers. Every year, we look forward to our annual store-wide summer sale in the online shop at Catholic.com. This spectacular online event includes savings of 10 to 50% and more in some cases on every book, track, CD, DVD, ebook, and MP3 we carry. You might not be aware of all the great products Catholic Answers Press has put out over the past few years. Indeed, Catholic Answers Press is creating more resources than ever in its history. So visit shop.catholic.com and take advantage of our very special prices on the best products from the people you know and trust at Catholic Answers.
Layla Rose says, Trent Horn really knows how to get people thinking and talking about abortion. Persuasive Pro-Life is an invaluable handbook for anyone who wants to become more skilled at defending the humanity of the preborn. Order your copy of Persuasive Pro-Life today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the online shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Cerman. In Matthew 10, Jesus summoned his 12 disciples and gave them authority to drive out unclean spirits and to cure every disease. He then sent them out after instructing them to avoid pagan territory and Samaritan towns. They were to proclaim the kingdom of heaven to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. His first concern was for his chosen people. God had singled them out for a special relationship with him. Jesus, the Messiah, who came from them and for them, was simply acknowledging this. God would never forget his special relationship with them. Even now, they remain his chosen people. But his love is not limited to them. His love is not limited, period. You are the deliberate result of his love. Not only is every hair of your head numbered, so is every beat of your heart. In life and death, you are his. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Last segment today with Trent Horn. Trent, you have labored mightily, almost 2 hours with us. Thank you very much for that. Mm-hmm. We've got lots and lots of calls, so I'm going to try to move through them quickly here in the final session so we make sure we get to as many as we can. Corey in St. Louis, Missouri, listening on 92.7 AM. Why are you pro-choice?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm kind of in between. I was pro-choice when I entered the church last year in 2016, and I'm working at it, but I can't understand why after it was after abortion was illegal, women were getting it done, and they were dying because they were getting it done wrong. So is it pro-life to almost have it administered by someone who knows what they're doing? And I also just, during election season, I almost just feel bullied to vote pro-life, even though that's not my conscience. And I feel like sometimes we make ourselves look bad being so militant, even though we should be. It just, I've kind of having a hard time with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me address two of those points, Corey, and congratulations on coming into the church. Do hang on to our call screener, though, after our call has ended. I'd like to get your contact information so we can send you a copy of my new book, Why We're Catholic, which actually has a chapter on what the church teaches on life and why we protect life. And the book may also be helpful for you as a new Catholic. So Why We're Catholic is great also for people who are thinking of being Catholic but who are new to figure out why we believe what we believe. So do stay on the line. And as to the questions that you raised, first, about the safety of abortion, would you agree that a medical procedure is unsafe if half the people involved die every time?
Yeah.
So I think you're probably going here that I would agree with you. I'm okay with abortion if you can make it as safe for the child as it currently is for the mother, but you really can't. So for me, people will always break the law, and some of them will break the law and might hurt themselves in the process. You know, this is an analogy. I'm not making direct comparisons, but we make terrorism illegal, obviously, because it's wrong. But to get around that, some people will do it illegally and get killed or do suicide bombings. But we don't make it legal, so it's safer for them to hurt other people. So my point would be that we should not make it legal so it's safer for a bigger person to kill or maim a smaller person. So that'd be my point on the question of safety and legality. Then the point on the church and bullying. Well, I hope the church, no official bullied you in any regard, but the church does vigorously and openly oppose things like abortion. And I think it's good for the church to take a public stand against grave evils. Like, for example, would you agree that it would not be embarrassing and it's heroic, like if you see the Catholic Church standing up to, once again, analogy, not direct comparison, standing up to Hitler in World War II Germany, or Catholics standing up to other human rights abuses around the world? If abortion is a human rights abuse, the church should stand up to that too, correct?
Right. Yeah, right.
We can always do it more tactfully and pragmatically, obviously, and that's something we're always trying to improve, but that doesn't take away from our main goal, which is if we're going to, I guess you could look at it this way, you know, the church should, what issues should the church concern itself with in elections? And I would say that at the forefront, the most important ones are those that affect a large number of people and involve our most basic rights, like the right to life, the right to liberty, the right to not be enslaved or tortured. And to me, the combination of those, abortion is going to rise to the top of the list because it affects over 1 million unborn children and it affects their most basic right, the right to life. So is that a helpful answer for you?
Yeah. I guess I just, maybe bully was a strong word, but I didn't really, before I was Catholic, I was a Christian, but I was quote pro-choice. And I just never saw it for what it was, you know, killing babies. I just never saw it like that. So... Mm-hmm.
But if you do see it like that, then it changes the whole optics or dynamics of the situation. So definitely think it over more and then stay on the line with our call screener. They'll get your contact information. I'm happy to send you a copy of my new book. So thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you.
Thank you, Corey. We go now to Alyssa in Columbus, Ohio. Alyssa, why are you pro-choice?
Hi. Well, for a while, I kind of have been riding the fence. So I know that I personally would never have an abortion. I have two biological children of my own, and I've been a foster parent to 13 other children over the past 3 years. So I feel like, I mean, me and my husband, we are Christian, and I've seen a lot of the ugly And I don't want to justify abortion just because of the things that I've seen. I also work as a pediatric nurse. I've been in the NICU for a couple years. And so I've just seen a lot of different kind of parents. And I just worry about these kids and what happens after they're born. Not saying that I want to, you know, I want them to die because, you know, I don't want them to die. I would love them to be born into a home that would love them. But I guess the reason that I felt led to call was I just want to really encourage Christians to consider maybe becoming foster parents or adoptive parents, because I think that is so important, and that would kind of help alleviate. You know what?
I see what you're saying, Alyssa. Let me post some observations to that. First, adoption is certainly a noble calling, and anyone who feels called to it should discern it carefully. But it's wonderful to provide a child with a loving home environment who normally would not have one. But how it relates to the issue of abortion is not so clear-cut. First, many children in foster care are what's called community adoption. They weren't necessarily unwanted by their parents. They may have been wanted. Those children would have never been aborted, but their parents later become unfit, usually through things like drug abuse or criminal convictions, things like that. So adoption is definitely awesome. But the thing is, here in our country, there is a waiting list for private adoption. For children, let's say a mom is thinking of having an abortion, will place her child for adoption. If you place a newborn healthy infant, they can be adopted almost immediately. There's like a 5 to 10 year waiting list for those kinds of children, the ones who are at most risk of being aborted right now. So while we should promote things like adoption and parenting resources, I think at the core, we have to ask ourselves, how do we treat children in difficult situations? And do we treat them differently based on whether they're born or not? And I think that as much as we are concerned about child abuse and things like that, we shouldn't let that compassion lead us into the error of mercy killing, whether it's born children or an unborn child. And so we just as we would protect, adopt, and cherish a child after birth and not let them just be euthanized, we should treat an unborn child the same way. And if we're Christian, we should do that because Jesus said, what you did for the least of my brethren is what you did for me. And the unborn are certainly the one of the least, if not the least, or helpless of our brethren. So you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand that. I don't think of abortion as like population control. Mm-hmm. We have a birth mother who just gave birth to a little boy, and we are in the process of adopting him, and he is legally blind. Mm-hmm. And so I'm so thankful that this is her seventh child. I'm so glad that she didn't have an abortion just so that we could be blessed with him.
Yeah.
But I never, ever want to justify an abortion because I look at it kind of like a double-edged sword. I'm kind of nervous right now because I know that I am on the radio. But
I commend you for calling, seeking clarification, and for asking these important questions about such an important subject. And I think your heart is leading you in the right place on this issue of seeing how abortion is not an answer to the sufferings little children may or will have. And I would just encourage you to continue to form your conscience in that regard. So definitely check out our website, Catholic.com. You can get a copy of my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, that goes into the issue in more detail to see that even if there's suffering in the world, it is better to endure suffering, to treat it, than it is to inflict it on others, even in the name of reducing suffering. So, but thank you so much for calling, and do check out our website, Catholic.com, for more.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks, sure, Alyssa. Trent, one thing that a lot of callers wanted us to address in the last 2 hours was the fact that we use the word pro-choice. They prefer we use some harsher term, but I do think there's a good practical reason why we use that term. We want to have a conversation with people.
That's right. I'm sometimes criticized for using the term pro-choice, and in this debate, I find pro-life and pro-choice are not the most helpful terms. But they're useful because many people subscribe to them. So I just follow the rule of I call people in this context, just this context, I call them what they want to be referred by. So if they say they're pro-choice, great. If I say I'm pro-life, call me that. I do that because I have so much to argue about. I have so much to discuss, the humanity of the unborn, how we treat children. I don't want to put up another unnecessary wall by telling them their self-label is wrong or argue about semantics. I don't want to win an argument about semantics. I want to win an argument about life. You're absolutely right, Si. I don't want to lose the argument for life to win semantics. I want to win over those and get them to see the value of unborn children. I'll call them whatever they want to be called if it saves a baby's life.
Thanks, Trent, very much. Enjoyed the 2 hours with you.
Enjoyed it with you as well, Si.
Open forum all day tomorrow on Catholic Answers Live. Thank you, Andrew, the intern, Andrew, the videographer, and Nick, the engineer, for being with us here for this show. Thank you, Robert, for being in studio with us. I'm going to be speaking in about an hour and a half at St. Michael's Parish in San Diego on Homedale Street. See you then, and we'll see you tomorrow on Catholic Answers Live.